Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you. So lucky to be the one you run to see. When the day is through.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 613. 13, my favorite number. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm so excited to continue this conversation about marriage equality with now my buddy, Mark Solomon. Mark is the National Campaign Director of Freedom to Marry and a chief strategist for marriage equality for more than a decade. His recently critically acclaimed book, Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won, is really such a wonderful perspective from the inside on this fight for marriage equality, how it has ignited across the United States and how we are winning. And hey, Mark, it's good to have you on again.
It's great to be back.
Well, last week we did a bit of a history lesson. We kind of got ourselves up to date, at least to the point that the Supreme Court made this, you know, enormous decision in the Windsor case for DOMA, and also in the Perry v. Hollingsworth for Prop 8 in California. And it really was such a huge victory. You know, I know for us as folks in Illinois, it was like the Supreme Court and marriage coming to Illinois, and so much stuff happened right on top of one another, that it was just a cacophony of excitement here in the Midwest. Talk to me about the Supreme Court and you know, they're going to be, when we look back in the history books, the Supreme Court is going to be such a key player in this story for marriage equality, and yet not the only player. They have taken their time on the sidelines, so to speak, and let other people run this ball down the field. Talk to me a little bit about where we started with, the summer with Prop 8 and DOMA, what that impact had on us first. Let's talk about that, the first Supreme Court rulings.
Yeah, so the... you know, the Supreme Court took up a couple of cases. One, they ultimately chose not to rule, gave us California back. They essentially, you know, let the district court decision stand, finding Proposition 8, California Proposition 8, unconstitutional. But then the biggie was the case that we all know of Edie Windsor, who was married to her spouse, Thea Spire, and she had this, you know, when her spouse passed away after a long illness, Edie Windsor was saddled with a huge inheritance tax because the federal government treated them, even though they'd been together for 40-plus years, treated the two of them as legal strangers. That case captured the imagination of our community and of people all over the country, and it captured the imagination and really got to the heart of what equal protection means in our Constitution. And so the court ruled 5-4 that the so-called Defense of America Act, which said that, you know, we don't really care what you do in the states. The federal government is going to treat married same-sex couples as legal strangers. That law was just didn't come close to passing muster under equal protection.
And it's interesting, right? Just to go back and even things we talked about in the last show, and for people who are not, activists or who aren't political junkies, I think as you defined yourself before in the last show, one of the wonderful things that you often do when you're trying to get bills passed or make advances in legislative halls is to personalize a story. And obviously then you attach people, right, to cases that are examples of why you should pass a law, because it affects real people. But I think this is something that we've done really, really well in your organization and started with Evan and Mary, Mary Bonato and Evan Wolfson, who I know you dedicate the book to and have been with this fight since the early days. Is that all we needed to do, you know, at the root of homophobia is people's ignorance, or they just don't know, or they think they don't know anyone gay, or they think that there's a difference, or they think that it's other. And, I feel like what has been so successful in this marriage fight, and you talk about it in your own life and in your own story, is just, you know, the personal is hard to ignore. And once these become real people and real stories that people can identify with and feel close to, and we're humanized as LGBT people, this is where we get people on the right side of this story and on our side of wanting this equality for all. Don't you think that's right? And those two cases both, I think, so exemplified and showed that in front of the Supreme Court.
I think that's true. What regular Americans needed to see was that, was the integrity of our relationships. They needed to see that our relationships, just like theirs, are based on love and commitments through thick and thin, for better, for worse, and that we wanted to marry in order to really honor the depth of those relationships. And once straight Americans started seeing that is why we wanted to marry, and that it wasn't that what our opponents were saying about how we wanted to change, transform marriage, et cetera, this wasn't the case. People started coming around pretty quickly. That case.
What did that change for us as LGBT people? I mean, immediately when the federal government says we're going to treat everyone the same, that impacts just very real life things. For employees and for Social Security. And can you talk about some of those things that just instantly had to start happening? And we'd also had the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where, federal and military and federal legislation was starting to encompass lesbian and gay military people as well. So it started kind of becoming something very understandable and recognizable in federal circles, I guess, so to speak.
Well, the federal government plays a huge impact in people's lives.
Yeah.
So, number one, there were a number of areas, but some of the key ones were immigration, from the get-go, that binational couples no longer had to choose between their partner and their country. And they could, they could get married. And even if they married in a state, that wasn't their home state, the federal government would respect that marriage. So that was a biggie. Taxation and treating couples as married, for the federal government, treat couples as married for the purpose of federal income taxes, and estate taxes, as in the case of Edie Windsor. Social Security survivor protection. So we wouldn't have a horrible situation where a couple is together for a long time, one of them gets sick and passes away, and their income level drops precipitously because a married couple is supposed to be able to hold on to the higher Social Security benefit. But, you know, for gay couples, that wasn't the case. So we literally had instances where people would be forced out of their homes. You know, and I know two people who, you know, who were with their partners for decades and decades and had to leave their homes, even if they were mourning the death of their spouse. So it's really, you know, and on and on and on, the importance of many of these protections.
Well, and this is real life-changing stuff, like you're talking about. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people, we go way, way back when Vermont, you know, passed civil unions. People are like, well, civil unions are enough. You know, it's like you can go and you can get protections for power of attorney and you can choose some of these things. But the stuff that you're talking about that changed that day with the Supreme Court were the big things that changed the fabric of many people's lives. On such a real level, on such a security, financial, and protections level. We're going to break and talk about what's going on this week in the news. Also, what's going on in the cultural arts and theater scene here in Chicago. Things are heating up as we head into springtime, as you know, in stages across Chicago. We come back, we're going to talk about state-by-state empowerment, what that has looked like. We've been talking about that a little bit in our last show, but what started to happen as some states are saying, yeah, well, we're not going to recognize your marriage in our state, or other states now adopting and voting or passing same-sex marriage. I mean, I think we kind of all felt like everything changed, or I did, that when Utah had marriage. and I have been predicting it here as a born and bred Tennessean. I've been saying for 5 months that Tennessee will take this all the way to Supreme Court, and we are. We are one of the four. And we're going to come back with Mark and talk about the four cases, the case that will be heard challenging state laws by the Supreme Court here in April. So Mark Solomon's still on with me after this.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
Gay couples began getting married in Alabama on February 9th after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to block a court order requiring the state to license same-sex marriages. The decision came after Roy Moore, the state chief justice, had defied a federal court decision and ordered clerks not to recognize same-sex marriages on the day they were to take effect. However, at least 35 of the state's 67 counties refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples as of that same day.
Michigan Governor Rick Snyder announced that his administration will recognize 300 same-sex marriages that took place during a 24-hour window when they were legal in Michigan last year. However, that doesn't change the Republican administration's plan to defend the state's ban on same-sex marriage at the U.S. Supreme Court later this year. The case out of Michigan is one of four marriage equality cases the nation's highest court will consider this spring, likely issuing a ruling on the legality of same-sex marriage nationwide by June.
Lesbian Houston Mayor Anise Parker, who is serving her third and last term as the city's mayor, was named one of the top 10 mayors of the world for 2014. She ranked number 7 on the top 10 list for the international competition and was the only U.S. mayor to make it into the top 10.
The search to find the man responsible for killing North Philadelphia lesbian woman in broad daylight last month has ended. Randolph Sanders, a co-worker of Kim Jones, confessed to murdering the 56-year-old newlywed the morning of January 13th. Investigators say Sanders killed Jones because she was investigating his alleged theft from their workplace.
Atlanta police have arrested the domestic partner of a woman who was shot and killed and charged with her murder. Ashley Bell, 22, was shot and killed January 26 in an Atlanta apartment that she shared with Laura Bozeman, also 22.
Nikki Kwasny, the Munster, Indiana woman who, along with her wife Amy Sandler, became one of the most prominent figures in the movement last year to legalize same-sex marriage in the state, has died at the age of 38. She died February 5th, more than 5 years after she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Last spring, a federal judge granted an emergency request to recognize their Massachusetts marriage, a decision that made them the first and, for a time only, legally married same-sex couple in the state.
Same-sex marriage became legal in Indiana last October.
An Arkansas man's husband has claimed he was turned away from numerous churches while trying to hold a funeral for his deceased partner. Even the local firehouse, which was built by his father, reportedly closed its doors to the grieving family, refusing to host a reception or memorial for James Stone, who died at the age of 32 in January.
Two GOP lawmakers have signed on as co-sponsors of the Respect for Marriage Act, a bill that would fully repeal the so-called Defense of Marriage Act. U.S. Reps Robert Dole of Illinois and Carlos Corbello of Florida joined co-sponsors Reps Ileana Ros-Latinen from Florida and Richard Hanna, New York, all Republicans, raising the total to four. U.S. Rep. Gerald Nadler, Democrat from New York, reintroduced the bill in the U.S. House January 6th, aimed at ensuring all legally married same-sex couples are treated equally under federal law. U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California introduced the companion bill in the Senate.
In Texas, Fort Worth has now extended spousal benefits to the legal same-sex spouses of city employees. The policy change was made to keep the city in compliance with IRS rulings handed down in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's 2013 ruling in U.S. v. Windsor.
In world news, Secretary of State John Kerry will appoint a special envoy within the State Department who will promote LGBT rights globally. The State Department is in the final vetting stages for the envoy, who will be an openly gay foreign service officer.
ISIS militants have reportedly thrown another gay man off a building who was then stoned to death after surviving the fall. It is the fourth execution for alleged homosexuality that the jihadist group has carried out in the last few weeks.
Latvia may become the next Eastern European state to formally recognize the relationships of unmarried couples in a proposal that would see same-sex couples recognized for the first time in the country's history. Couples would have to be over 18, compared to 16 for married couples, and would be banned from solemnizing their relationship in religious places of worship.
A Swedish man will reportedly be jailed for 2 years in Tunisia for homosexual acts. The man in his 50s, who's been living in France, was imprisoned on February 4th. The Swedish Foreign Ministry has protested the arrest, with the sentence being appealed.
One of the leading members of the Church of England's evangelical wing has come out as a lesbian. Jane Ozan, 46, revealed her sexuality after a struggle that took her through exorcism attempts, thoughts of suicide, and a mental breakdown. She has been named director of Accepting Evangelicals, a group that advocates for LGBT equality within the evangelical Christianity.
President Obama has been urged to raise the subject of LGBT rights in trade talks with Brunei. Brunei is one of 11 nations to join the U.S. in signing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, if passed, would create the largest trade pact in history. In April of 2014, Brunei revised its penal code to include death by stoning for same-sex sexual activity.
In entertainment news, President Obama recently lauded the LA Galaxy 2014 Major League Soccer champions. Obama called out gay Galaxy player Robbie Rogers personally. "I want to recognize what Robbie Rogers of the Galaxy has done for a lot of people by blazing a trail as one of professional sports' first openly gay players," said Obama.
Rosie O'Donnell's leaving The View for the second time, this time after just 5 months, to focus on her family. Rosie and her wife Michelle split in November.
Olympic gold medalist Bruce Jenner was involved but not hurt in a four-car crash in Malibu, California, that left one driver dead and five hospitalized. Jenner, who was a driver in one of the cars, passed a field sobriety test and then voluntarily submitted a blood sample to determine whether he was intoxicated. A few hours later, a drunken driver drove into the car crash site. Paparazzi played a role in the original crash.
Oscars host Neil Patrick Harris and husband David Burka shared pictures of their Harlem townhouse with Architectural Digest. The home was initially built in 1904 as a speakeasy for Irish mill workers.
Tony Award-nominated Broadway star Anthony Rapp is behind BroadwayCon, a new convention for Broadway fans and theatergoers. Set to take place January 22nd through 24th of 2016 at the New York Hilton Midtown, BroadwayCon was created as a one-of-a-kind weekend that will bring theater fans together with the performers and creators of their favorite shows. Tickets, which go on sale March 15th, will include built-in access to autographs and photo ops with Broadway professionals. A portion of all proceeds from tickets benefit Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS.
Sophie B. Hawkins is pregnant with her second child at 50. The Damn I Wish I Was Your Lover singer, who is already mom to a six-year-old son, is pregnant with a baby girl after being implanted with her own frozen embryo.
Yaya DaCosta, coming off playing pop icon Whitney Houston in the Lifetime biopic, is set to star in Chicago Med, a medical drama spinoff from NBC's Chicago Fire. DaCosta will play a nurse who begins to date Chicago Fire's Kelly, played by Taylor Kinney.
Selma co-star and producer Oprah Winfrey and director Ava DuVernay will create a new original drama series for OWN. Inspired by the novel Queen Sugar, DuVernay will write, direct, and executive produce the project with Winfrey in a recurring role.
And a new study showed that female characters compose just 12% of protagonists in the top 100 grossing films of 2014. The figure is 3% below 2013's figure. Racial diversity among the female roles also saw a dip in certain areas. Black and Latino female roles declined, while Asian female roles saw a slight increase in number. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
This is Gregory Douglas, and you're on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Kaweez!
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 16th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. A Red Orchid Theater toasts the start of 2015 with the smash hit Accidentally Like a Martyr by Grant James Vargas. Directed by Shade Murray, the flawless ensemble acting is highly recommended by the Sun-Times. And the Tribune says Accidentally Like a Martyr is a warm and potent show, well worth 80 minutes of your time. Now playing through March 1st with tickets and more at aredorchidtheater.org.
The smash Broadway hit and classic musical comedy La Cage aux Folles is now at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, playing through March 29th. Feathers get ruffled and households upended in a poignant tale of one family's struggle to stay together, stay fabulous, and above all else, stay true to themselves. Visit MarriottTheater.com for tickets and more.
Award-winning Porchlight Music Theater presents the Chicago premiere of the hit Broadway revue, Sondheim on Sondheim, February 6th through March 15th at Stage 773. Do not miss the all-star cast performing songs from 19 Sondheim shows with video of the composer himself. For tickets and more information, visit porchlightmusictheater.org.
Steppenwolf Theater presents Marie Antoinette, a modern take on the young queen of France, called an unconventional, bitingly comic play, a jagged yet elegant historical riff by Time Out New York. Tickets are on sale now. Get your seats at steppenwolf.org.
Don't miss the American premiere of the scandalous new play, The Glass Protégé, a tale of a forbidden gay love affair between two male movie stars in the 1940s Hollywood. Brought to you by Giant Cherry Productions in association with Glitterati Productions. From February 20th through March 29th, tickets available now from www.theaterwit.org. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueercast.com.
Just say it, say it, say it.
So off guard and sweeps you away. Your
we're gearing up now. The Supreme Court kind of passed the ball back to the states. They made their big rulings with Prop 8 and DOMA. But then they've kind of sat on the sidelines and watched how state by state navigated marriage equality. But now it has come to the point, you know, when Mississippi and Arkansas and Utah and some of these states are turning, and 70% of Americans or more live where marriage is legal and recognized between same-sex couples, that the holdout has now taken with, they're not the last four states, but they are the four states that are taking the case to the Supreme Court to challenge state laws that continue to discriminate against same-sex couples in marriage. Talk to me about how this became the case to the Supreme Court, and what did the Supreme Court, what were their options? I mean, did they have to hear it? Why did they decide to hear it? What are your views on why we're ending up at this moment that's about to happen in April?
Sure. So after the court gave us this great win in the Windsor case on DOMA, judge after judge used that ruling as the basis for striking down state bans on gay couples marrying, and saying that the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause means that states can't marry straight couples and not marry gay couples. There's no basis for that. Mm-hmm. So what happened is we were just on an absolute roll, winning, and the Supreme Court essentially said that until there's a loss, there's no good reason for us to take up a case. So what they did is they allowed all of these victories to go into effect, and that happened in Utah and in Wyoming and in Kansas and in Oklahoma and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And then we find there was finally a loss at the appeals court level in the four states that you mentioned, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee. And then the Supreme Court, once there was this loss, they said, well, one of the times the Supreme Court usually takes up a case is when appeals courts from different regions rule differently. So in this case, the appeals court out of the Midwest, the Sixth Circuit ruled differently than several of the other appeals courts did. And they said, well, we need to take this up and resolve it nationwide. And that's what they've done. And so we are now preparing actively for the next case to be in front of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court consolidated the four cases out of the four states together. And, they are each very powerful stories of couples who were denied the right to marry, or denied the respect for their marriage in their home states. And, it's very clear to me that we're going to be putting forth an extraordinarily powerful case.
What will it look like actually? Like, for somebody who has no clue what it's like when you go to have a hearing with the Supreme Court. I mean, how many days will it be? How many people will get to talk? Is it people for and against each have equal time? Like, what is it going to look like logistically?
Sure. So it'll be one day, and it'll be a specific amount of time during the day. There will be equal time for our side and our opponent's side. Our opponents will be represented by some set of the lawyers of the attorneys general from the states. And Kentucky is the only state that's the only attorney general that's not appealing, but the governor is. So the four states will be arguing in support of what the Sixth Circuit did, and in support of keeping the bans on marriage in place. And our side is going to need to figure out, these four legal teams are going to need to figure out who argues on their behalf before the Supreme Court. And so I'm sure that I know they're in close conversations now about how that's going to work. And then the administration, the Solicitor General, will almost assuredly argue in support of striking down marriage bans. And so that will take some of the time on our side to have the administration weigh in. And that's how it will go. It will not be terribly long.
Isn't it crazy? It's so crazy that like we hear stupid things about some, you know, who knows? Like, I mean, I've been on jury duty. It's like, you know, you could be, I was on jury duty for 6 weeks one time in Chicago, you know, and not saying it wasn't a big story. It was over, you know, a decade worth of work, but it was 6 weeks and we're talking about one day, you know?
So it'll be in less than one day. It'll be, I think it's an hour and a half on each side. And,
wow.
You know, and you also prepare and you're ready for every kind of question and you're ready to make a statement. And usually I was lucky enough to be there during the Windsor DOMA oral arguments. And you know, second as the lawyer gets started, you know, one of the justices breaks in and starts, you know, pounding the person with questions. So it's, you know, you have to be quick on your toes. But I would also say this, that what's in this case, the actual case that's being made in the courtroom is important, but it's going to be the collective weight of, you know, of sort of the overall case that we collectively are making in the courtroom. There'll also be dozens, literally, of briefs, of businesses that support getting rid of these bans, of Republicans, of first responders, of, you know, and on and on. So we will be making an exceptionally powerful case about how, you know, these marriage bans harm children and harm families. And so, so the argument day itself has a lot of drama associated with it, but, you know, it's really the collective presentation that the court gets that is so important.
Are there any concerns? I mean, is momentum on our side, Mark? I mean, do we feel? I mean, I know cautiously confident going into this hearing in April, based on what has happened across the U.S. over the past even year.
Look, no question, momentum is on our side.
I mean, you mentioned the pundits in your title. We took on the politicians and the pundits. But, I mean, even some of the, you know, I think of more of the far, far right Republicans have said, who are on a lot of the pundit talk shows or whatever, have said, you know, this marriage story is over, like we've lost, you know. So when that statement gets made, is that true? Is the Supreme Court taking it back now when they feel like they have the majority of Americans on their side to make this happen now? I mean, they said they're hearing two questions. The second question is moot if they answer into the affirmative of the first. That's correct? Is that the way I understand
it?
There are two questions that they are hearing or asking that are being asked.
And one of them, the first one is whether you're allowed to ban gay couples from marrying. And the second is whether you can not respect a marriage, a legally performed marriage, if marriage is still illegal in your state. But if we won on the first question, the second one, isn't really applicable anymore. I'd say no question, momentum is strongly on our side. We are at 60% of the public that supports us, and it's certainly young people, but it's not just young people. We've seen huge increases in support among Republicans, among seniors, among really every way you can slice and dice the population of the country. We're at more than 70% of the country lives in a state where gay couples can now marry, 36 states. It would be impossible to say that momentum is not on our side. At the same time, we do have a conservative Supreme Court.
Right. And I was going to ask, which justice are you all looking to? I mean, who do you think will be throwing out the most questions, and who will be the person to stay focused on? Who are the kind of wild cards on the bench?
Well, Anthony Kennedy is the one that everybody looks towards as the quote-unquote swing justice, and he has been, but on matters of LGBT equality, he hasn't been a swing justice. He has been an incredibly powerful, enforceable advocate of the position that that constitutional rights and protections belong to gay and lesbian people, just as they belong to every American. So, he's written the three major, the majority opinion and the three major gay rights rulings. So I would, be hopeful and would anticipate, guessing, of course, that he will write the next one.
Yeah.
I think the thing, that I'd be, I get more worried about, people's health and things like that, because it is a narrow majority that we seem to have right now.
Yeah. Somebody said on one of our shows a couple of weeks ago that, some people were saying that Ginsburg, having performed a marriage, should recuse herself. Having performed a same-sex marriage, that there have been people who have been calling for justices to recuse themselves. We've had Sotomayor and Ginsburg have both performed same-sex marriages. Is there any validity to that? Does that have any legal standing that you know of? I mean, I know you're not an attorney, but...
No, I mean, I think it has no, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I felt like. I thought, well, that's just crazy. I mean, it's desperate times and desperate measures. Somebody will say something like that, but that doesn't have anything with, they're not breaking the law, so they don't have to really recuse themselves of something that they legally did that was legally able to be done, in a state that they were in. So I didn't feel that it was, but I felt like I should mention it since it got a little bit of airtime here. I mean, that's the thing, right? The pundits. I mean, this is as much a story about politicians and legislators as it is what people on the street, what is getting lip service. It's the way it is today. How much do you think we have changed the pundits and changed the story that, we want to have told here? How successful have we been, especially?
Well, we've been incredibly successful, and I think we really have changed the narrative 180 degrees. I think, when the story begins in 2003, people thought that, for elected officials, voting our way was the third rail of American politics. If you vote, mm-hmm. With us on marriage equality, your career is over. Now, everybody is, there have been numerous articles now that Republicans want to see this get done in 2015, so they don't even have to talk about it in 2016. Mm-hmm. But I would also say that we can't and we shouldn't rest on our laurels. Mm-hmm. We need to drive this through all the way to the end, and then we can, after we win nationwide, we can then talk about how we've changed how we've really changed things fully. Things are very different, but nobody should be resting. We should all be working our hardest to make the case and continue to grow support, and so that when we are in front of the Supreme Court, when they're making their ruling, they look out and see that America is ready.
Yeah. I'm always surprised by people who say it feels like it's happening all of a sudden, it's happening all of a sudden. And you and these past two shows and so many countless people. I mean, you dedicate your book to two people who have been tirelessly working in this fight. You have and how many organizations and countless people, on the legal and volunteers and advocates and activists and regular everyday people who've let their stories be the stories on parade state to state, and our straight allies from people like Ted Olson, and others who have helped champion this fight. How do we, listening to this show or reading your book, how do we help lend impact to what needs to happen over the next few months leading up to April and even when the decision comes down through June? What's important? What are your organizations needing, and what does the fight need for us to win?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. What we're working on now is we're working to put together what are called amicus briefs or friend of the court briefs, and we're trying to enlist the most powerful list of spokespeople, of corporations, of Republicans, of first responders. So I think if you, you know, if you know, your listeners have connections in those types of ways, they should get in touch with us at Freedom to Marry, and we're looking for all the help we can get. Clergy people as well is a big place where we want to make a serious impact and show the court that there's clergy from every part of the country that is on board. In addition, it's continuing to, you know, as simple as sharing your story about why this is important that the court finishes the job. And, you know, it's sort of the old Harvey Milk admonition of coming out, but in this case, it's coming out and talking about your family and why marriage is important to you or to your kids or to your parents, just continuing to have the, you know, have a conversation with people that are in your life. I mean, not everybody can write a brief to the Supreme Court, but everybody can have a conversation with someone who they are close to, who hasn't come on board yet. And then last, I'd say, you know, the other thing that people can do is they can write a check and write a check to us, to one of the legal groups that's helping lead the fight. You know, it all costs money, and hopefully, if all goes well, it won't cost money for very long. But you know, we're now in the, hopefully in the final stretch.
Yeah. Well, it's very, very exciting, and I found your book very moving, and I just, you know, one of the things is that, you know, of course this is a, you know, this is a history book, this is a political book, this is a book about activism, this is a book of reflection, but it's also the book of you, you know, a man, and looking back on your life and 10 years and moments of extreme happiness and extreme sadness, you know, people that come into your life and people that you lost, and, you know, and looking back on this decade, you know, we're all still living our lives. And what I love about your book is how there's so much of your own humanity and story in it, you know, that it is a very personal account through which we can understand a very complex, large story, you know, of a very rapid moving civil rights movement that we as LGBT people have been in. You know, I was saying a few shows ago, and that with Mitchell, my other co-host, that, you know, having seen the movie Selma, and you see that from when Selma was happening was a handful of years, you know, later that Stonewall would occur. And when we think about how rapid our civil rights movement, and now what we're seeing in the trans movement, which is kind of, you know, since I've been doing this work in the 90s, you know, it was kind of like legislation would get passed, and then we had to tie it up years later and include trans people, and how rapidly now their movement is happening with just the conversation of transgender people being more in the forefront through culture and media and legislation. So I appreciate you putting your humanity, Mark, into the book and your own personal account, because I think it's powerful, and it makes us think of, like, what is the past 10 or 14 years of our lives meant. Some of us listening may be very young, and, you know, not much was happening 10 or 14 years. And those of us who are, you know, have a perspective of the entire 14 years in this community, you know, I just felt a real synergy with what you were sharing. And I appreciate it very, very much.
Sure. It was a pleasure. I mean, I'm happy to have written it, and I'm happy to have told the story. And it is a powerful story, and you know, I think it's something that our community can really look back upon and be very proud of how we've made our case and how we've fought for our rights.
Yeah, it's really an amazing book. I hope people will pick it up. It's one to have in your homes. And the book is available everywhere. I mean, Mark was doing a lot of touring and we were unable to have him on when he was in Chicago. But are you still out on the road or are
I am. I actually yeah. I'm all over the place. I'm in New England and I'm in Denver again and I'm going to be in I can't even keep track. I'll be back in Los Angeles and all over the place.
Good.
So yeah.
Well, hopefully people can come out and get their book signed or meet you. And I'm sure all that information is on the freedomtomarry.org website.
Yeah, they can go to that site or they can go to the book site, which is just my name, marksolomon.com. It's marksolomon.com. And they can easily find the book travel schedule and go from there.
Fantastic. We'll have both linked in our show notes. For those of you listening, you can go right to our site and click through to both the freedomtomarry.org page if you want to make a donation, get mobilized, find out how you can help. If you know one of those contacts that you can pass on to that organization, that would be fantastic. And also Mark's page, marksolomon.com, where you can find out about his touring schedule, see if he's coming to a town near you, and pick up a copy of the book. The book is called Winning Marriage, and we are, little by little, and it's all happening. Mark, I hope you'll come back with me on in April and give us your own bird's eye view of what happens there with the Supreme Court, and then we will, of course, wait with you with anticipation as to for June, for Gay Pride Month, not lost on any of us, I think, when we will hear the decision. So it'll be thrilling if you'd be willing to come back on in the spring.
I'd love to. I'd absolutely love to.
Fantastic. Winning Marriage, the inside story of how same-sex couples took on the politicians and pundits and won, by Mark Solomon. Mark, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
And next week, it's Oscar time. We're going to be heading to the high holidays, the high holy days, the high fashion days in the LGBT community. It's very exciting as our Oscar podcast, our annual Oscar podcast. See if Richard Knight Jr., our movie queen, got it right. His predictions, my predictions, Mitchell's predictions, what we think will happen, and more than importantly, how do people look on the red carpet? That's what we'll really be talking about. So thanks, everyone. I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you next time. So young, so thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.